Jody Vance in for Linda this week. And we got to bring in Amir Ali on this next story. It is quite the tale to be told, Amir.
Yeah, he actually reached out to you via email first. His name's Eddie Elmer. He's a PhD student and a member of the City of Vancouver's 2S LGBTQ plus advisory committee and a member of the community as a whole. Now, he's lived in Vancouver for the last 20 years after moving from Hamilton, and he's felt mostly safe. But like a lot of people, the last few months have been a bit of a turning point. Just a disclaimer also, none of these views are associated with any of the committees or organizations that Eddie is a part of. These are all his personal views. And lastly, if you have any kids around, just a heads up that at one point, Eddie uses a word that is not PG friendly. This is Eddie Elmer's story.
Jody Vance in for Linda this week. And we got to bring in Amir Ali on this next story. It is quite the tale to be told, Amir.
Yeah, he actually reached out to you via email first. His name's Eddie Elmer. He's a PhD student and a member of the City of Vancouver's 2S LGBTQ plus advisory committee and a member of the community as a whole. Now, he's lived in Vancouver for the last 20 years after moving from Hamilton, and he's felt mostly safe. But like a lot of people, the last few months have been a bit of a turning point. I had to cut a lot of the conversation short because of time, but if you get a chance, please listen to the full thing on the podcast. Just a disclaimer also, none of these views are associated with any of the committees or organizations that Eddie is a part of. These are all his personal views. And lastly, if you have any kids around, just a heads up that at one point, Eddie uses a word that is not PG friendly. This is Eddie Elmer's story.
I am from Hamilton, Ontario, actually, and I moved here about 20 years ago. Because I had heard that Vancouver was a pretty safe place for gay people. And for me, for the last 20 years, it pretty much has been. But based on several experiences I've had over the last few months, I'm starting to doubt that.
What was the, turning point for you here in Vancouver? Maybe you can share a bit of the first couple instances that did make you feel unsafe here.
Well, just a little bit more about me. I have a bit of a unique perspective on the city. I'm sort of a night dweller. So I'm doing my PhD now, and I'm most productive at night. So I do a lot of writing at night. And to clear my mind, I like to go for walks in my neighborhood, the West End, also Cole Harbor, downtown area. And if I'm feeling a bit adventurous, sometimes in Gastown. This has been really important for me for my mental health, especially during the pandemic. Usually I feel very, very safe on my walks. I'm from Hamilton, which is a bit of a rough town, so I don't scare very easily. But I am aware that as a gay man who's not the most masculine, I am sometimes at risk for being targeted. But here in Vancouver, for the most part, I haven't had any problems with people at night. I think the most problems I've ever had have been like with a skunk or a raccoon or something. But during the last few months, there have been numerous times when people have approached me, followed me, yelled gay slurs at me, and threatened to physically assault me. And I think the most serious and memorable incident was back in May around Cole Harbor Community Center. And I'm sure your listeners are probably aware that that's a pretty quiet area, kind of boring, no offense to anyone, but very little happens there during the day and even during the night. So you can imagine how shocked I was when I was walking and somebody came out of nowhere and started asking me these really bizarre, nonsensical questions. I ignored him, and when I didn't respond, he asked me why I was being rude to him. Then he started calling me a faggot, followed me down the street. As I tried to get away from him, he started running after me and said he was going to beat the crap out of me and put a bullet through my skull.
Jeez.
Now, even though he didn't physically assault me, he could have, and for the most part, I took these threats really seriously, and I considered this a gay bashing, and I told that to the police. On another occasion, near Robson and Burrard, which is not, you know, a hot spot of crime for the most part, another man approached me, started flailing his arms, and then came right up at me, pressed his body against mine, and asked me why I was following him, even though he had approached me. He was clearly trying to start some kind of fight. With this person, I ignored him. I walked away, and then moments later, he picked up one of those orange construction signs that you see on the street. He lifted it up and smashed it to the ground, started yelling, all while looking in my direction. So I guess he wasn't happy that I ignored him. And then on another occasion near Harbor Center, again, not a particularly dangerous area during most times, there was somebody who was high on some kind of substances and was asking me why I was impersonating a soldier because I was wearing khaki pants and some brown and khaki shoes, and I guess he thought I was a soldier impersonating one. threatened to assault me, started running after me down the street. And fortunately, I was able to get into a taxi cab and get away from him. But had that cab not been there, I have no doubt that he would have assaulted me at that moment. And he was also yelling gay slurs at me while this was happening. I could go on about this. I mean, in addition to these three, which are the most memorable, I've been quite scared when I'm walking around and I see people openly carrying baseball bats and batons, like on Granville Street. I feel really uneasy around St. Paul's Hospital, Nelson Park, Davie Street, because there's a lot of people camping out, doing drugs, dealing drugs, and they make comments about, they stare at people and they make comments when people walk by. It's really, really unnerving, especially since we just had a murder behind St. Paul. So things have really changed in my neighborhood. And as a gay person who's grown up experiencing a lot of violence and bullying, this has had quite an impact on me. Whether or not the incidents are motivated by you know, anti-gay sentiment, I mean, they're traumatizing, especially because they're so unexpected.
And brazen. And how has this affected the way you navigate the city?
I am now, I used to listen to music when I walked about, because I just, you know, but now I know that it's really important to be totally aware of my surroundings. So I don't listen to music anymore. I'm constantly looking behind my back. If I hear even the slightest noise, you know, my ears perk up and I turn. It's usually, again, just a skunk or a raccoon, but I'm just really quite anxious. But I haven't let fear, I mean, I still go out at night. I refuse to let fear, you know, control me. But it's definitely had an impact. I mean, what used to be very relaxing walks are now quite tense.
And sorry to interject here, but you mentioned in the email you sent to the show, sort of outlining your story, that people that you know, some are sympathetic, but some have actually suggested that maybe you shouldn't be going out at night.
Yes, they have, and it's kind of upset me a little bit, because I mean, to me, that sounds like victim blaming.
Totally.
And it's like, really, I mean, why should I or other people, you know, be robbed of the ability to enjoy our city when we wish? Because there's a lot of people who work at night. They're night people. You know, they just prefer doing things at night, and they want to feel safe doing so. And I don't think they should have to curtail their activities while other people are able to go and harass people and assault people and basically do whatever they want, seemingly without consequence. And I should note, and I'm sure you're aware of this, these things have been happening during the daytime as well, on transit, on the streets. There was a horrible incident last month. Two seniors were assaulted at Queen Elizabeth Park by somebody who was intoxicated during broad daylight. They were quite traumatized by that incident.
You mentioned in at least one of these cases of hatred directed towards you that the person was visibly on drugs. Would you say that seems to be a trend in terms of the sort of ire directed towards you, that these people are from a background of drugs or maybe homeless? Because a lot of the stories we've been sharing on our show over the last few weeks are of people who have felt threatened by people from the community, from underprivileged communities, I'd say, people that are homeless or people who might have a drug history. Does that seem to be a trend with your history here too?
Unfortunately, in all the instances I have recounted, the person has been visibly under the influence of drugs or alcohol, behaving in a very, very erratic, very volatile manner. And, you know, a lot of people have told me, you know, this is why I kind of should take it all with a grain of salt. I mean, they're just words, they're just threatening you, but it's, you know, they're just and I've had some people say they're just homeless people or just drug addicted people. But as a gay person who's, quite sensitive to threats of violence, to me, it doesn't matter, you know, what the motivation is and, you know, who the words come from. You know, when I'm confronted with a situation, I am terrified. I listen to the words and I look at the person's hands to see if they have weapons. I'm totally focused on that. I'm not stopping to ask myself, well, you know, is this because the person is on substances? Do they have a mental health problem? You know, to my brain, and it just, that doesn't matter. And I really don't think, you know, it should excuse the behavior, because it's terrifying for everyone.
Yeah, that doesn't seem like a rational response to being threatened by violence. What has your interactions with the police been like? How have they responded to these threats of and actual interactions with you and people being violent towards you?
Well, my experiences have generally been positive, and partly because I, as I mentioned, I'm on the City of Vancouver 2S LGBT committee, and one of our liaisons is Constable Dale Quiring, who is the VPD's 2S LGBTQ plus liaison. And I've been keeping so many things I've been having to, I actually keep a journal, a diary, and I constantly, you know, talk to him about the experiences I've had. And he's the one that's encouraged me to call these things in, even if nothing happens that's physical, always call something in if you feel threatened. And I've been doing that. And, you know, even if and I've felt reassured by that. I mean, even if the police can't do something, you know, in the moment, if the suspect is gone, at least they know that something is happening in that area, and they will sort of redirect their resources, maybe increase patrols in that area. So that's very reassuring. When I've had to call police and spoken to them on the street, they've been very empathetic, very understanding, which is really, you know, important when something traumatic happens to you. So my experiences have generally been positive.
Are there other people that you know in the 2S LGBTQ plus community who have been in situations like yours, who now do feel unsafe in Vancouver?
A few of my friends have, and certainly when I go online, I see quite a few people making comments about feeling unsafe. In my neighborhood, particularly around the St. Paul's, like the entire perimeter around St. Paul's, there have been people who've raised concerns about drug activity and other activity in the Jim Diva Plaza, and people saying they don't feel safe to go there. When I walk by, I haven't seen too many awful things, but there are times, like it sort of comes and goes. Like sometimes Davie Street, like there's nobody there, and other times you see quite large encampments. And but there have been times when I would not feel safe going through that park, even during the daytime. I wouldn't go through that plaza even during the daytime. And others have said the same thing.
This is kind of a loaded question, and obviously there's no one sort of answer to stories like yours, but what do you think needs to happen for people, not just from the LGBTQ plus community, but in general, to feel safer in Vancouver?
Well, I have, you know, the reasons for all of these problems, I mean, are obviously really complicated, and our local politicians are struggling to find a solution or solutions. There's no one solution, and I don't want to wade into the whole political debate. It's quite a political issue right now. But there are two quite practical things that I think the city and also just citizens can do. And one of them is something that I've been pushing for many years now. First, when I was with the city's seniors advisory committee, and now with the 2S LGBT committee. And that is to ask council to ask staff to improve street lighting in the city. I don't know what your experience has been, but mine is that there are a lot of areas in the city where the lighting is quite poor or is obstructed or where lights have been burnt out for months at a time. And including around Cole Harbour Community Center, where I had my first shocking encounter, at least a dozen lights were burnt out on that street and had been for several months. And that's one of the reasons why I couldn't see the person approaching me and why I had a difficult time getting a description and giving that to the 911 operator. And I even had problems seeing the street sign and seeing numbers on buildings so I could give a precise location. And so I've presented a motion to our committee asking the city to take steps to improve street lighting and improve and expedite the repair of burnt out lights. And also to perhaps do a public education campaign to encourage people to report burned out lights. Because when you can't see where you're walking, when you can't see your surroundings, it's scary. Like, you need to be aware of your surroundings. And I think lighting is one very easy, cost-effective way to improve people's safety. And the other thing is just encouraging people to be a little more street smart. So, like I said, I don't listen to music anymore. I take my earbuds out, and I don't stare at my smartphone. But I see a lot of people walking around late at night by themselves with their face glued to their phone, and they are prime targets. They're not aware of their surroundings. They're not looking up. It's quite a problem. And also just encouraging people to call police whenever they feel unsafe. And so just, again, I mean, we don't want to do victim blaming, but it's, and I don't want to unnecessarily, you know, shock people, scare people, but it is important for people to be aware because things have been changing in these, in our neighborhoods.
Yeah, I think those are some excellent ideas, as you point out, with really simple solutions. One last thing that I thought I'd bring to the table. In the last 3 weeks, me personally, I've been in Vancouver all my life, and only in the last 3 weeks have I encountered situations like yours, including one recently where I was on the Canada line and someone was throwing homophobic slurs at me, believe it or not, who also seemed to be from similar situations of being underprivileged or maybe having a drug history. But one thing that one of our colleagues here on the show brought up is how no one said anything sort of to come to my aid. Now, I didn't expect that, but I wonder if you think that should be a piece of the solution, is for people to just maybe look out for one another a little more.
Well, I was going to mention that sometimes I do get quite upset in the city when I see, you know, people who are struggling, whether they're in physical danger or maybe they're overdosing. Like, I often run into people who are overdosing, and I'll call 911 and I'll stay with them until an ambulance comes. Or if somebody feels unsafe, I'll call police and wait until they come. And I think I'm doing a public service, but that can be scary because there've been times when I've stayed with somebody and to check on them, and somebody's actually come up behind me and started touching me. But anyway, you know, on public transit, when people see something, I mean, I certainly wouldn't encourage people to try to, you know, start an altercation or confront somebody, especially when they're in an intoxicated state. But, you know, one thing that I heard somebody suggest is, you know, it can be quite helpful maybe to just make eye contact with somebody who's on the receiving end of these insults, and maybe just go and sit next to them so that they don't feel all alone, because I think that's the worst thing. Words are one thing, but it's just feeling alone and not feeling validated, and then going home and thinking that nobody cared enough about you to recognize what was happening. You don't have to confront, but I think you can. There are things we can do in a safe way to comfort people who are experiencing this.
Yeah,
those memories will last forever. Like that, nobody came to your aid, nobody acknowledged you when that happened. I think that's the worst thing.
I hear the urgency and passion in your voice about this, and I think this is an amazing chat. And I'm grateful that you decided to share your story with us, and I'm thrilled that I get to be sharing it with the city. I really appreciate your time, Eddie, and thanks again for just being honest and sharing your story.
Thank you so much for having me. And again, I'm really upset that these things have also happened to you, and that they're happening to other people as well.